The following program, The Russ Belleville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belleville Show are their own, and The Russ Belleville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink and criminalize
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you. You had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belleville.
We love the air.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Monday, December 9th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Even here in beautiful Miami, Florida, where the sun's starting to go down, and, oh, I don't know, it's in the mid-70s outside. Very beautiful. Yeah, I know. Everybody in the Midwest and out West who's getting blanketed with snow hates me right now, but hey, times are tough. Sometimes you just got to take it as you can get it. And I am out here in Miami, Florida, visiting my girlfriend Gretchen and having a good time out here while I'm doing so, but also following all the latest news here that's going on in the marijuana community. And we'll be bringing that to you here in our 420 radio news right after this first break. Also on today's show, we're going to go behind the headlines, take a look at some statistics coming out of the state of Colorado, where the marijuana refugees have tripled in number out in Colorado as people seek that life-saving CBD oil treatment they saw on the Sanjay Gupta documentary. Also on today's show, it's Roots Monday, so we got Bacon Dan's tune in for today, a little Christmas ditty from Slade, so we're going to go all the way back into the classic rock archives for this one. And on today's show, it's Monday, so we're going to be visiting with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our Cannabis Q&A, answering the latest cannabis science, history, culture, and health. So be ready for that. And on today's show, at the end, we'll have time for a little bit of a radical rant. I want to take a look at what I consider to be the top five results of marijuana legalization. You know, marijuana legalization turned 1 year old on December 6th in Washington and December 10th, that's tomorrow, in Colorado. So we're at the 1 year anniversary, and we're going to take a look at what some of the results have been, the good things that have happened, and the bad things that did not come true, those things that were predicted by cops and by some people who smoke marijuana. All of that and more coming up on today's Russ Belleville Show. Like I said, from Miami, Florida. We'll be back in the studio on Friday, and make sure you stay tuned later tonight. We've got some great music in the new Viper Hour at 8 p.m. Pacific. So we'll be right back after this. Stick around.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belleville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belleville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Cannabis Outreach Collective is an alternative health and wellness option located in Gladstone, Oregon, that serves patients in the Portland area and beyond. We are a full-service alternative health and wellness collective accommodating patients with natural, organic, holistic, and homeopathic remedies, nutritional guidance, advice, education, and medical cannabis, fully in accordance with Oregon OMMP law. You can find out more about Cannabis Outreach Collective on Facebook at COC503 or by emailing cannabisoutreachcollective503@gmail.com or by telephone at 503-853-1319. Check out our menu on Weed Maps and visit Cannabis Outreach Collective today.
This is your 420 Radio News for Monday, December 9th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Uruguay determined to legalize marijuana, from Huffington Post. Uruguay seems determined to create a legal marijuana market despite warnings from educators, psychiatrists, and pharmacists of dangerous side effects. The Senate is set to open debate on the pot plan Tuesday, and since lawmakers turned away all requests for amendments after it passed the lower chamber, the vote will be final. President Jose Mujica says the point is not to promote marijuana use, but to push out organized crime by denying traffickers profits from an illegal trade. Psychiatrists predict a rise in mental illness, educators warn of failures at school, and pharmacists say selling pot alongside prescription drugs hurts their profession. But marijuana grower Marcelo Vazquez tells the Associated Press he can't wait to pay taxes on the weed he's grown illegally for 20 years. Third marijuana legalization initiative filed in California for 2014, from the Daily Chronic. A California marijuana legalization initiative backed by the Drug Policy Alliance was filed last week with the state attorney general's office, but the National Drug Reform Group has said it has not yet decided whether to campaign to get it on the November 2014 ballot. The Control, Regulate, and Tax Marijuana Act would legalize up to an ounce and four plants for people 21 and over and create a statewide system of regulated marijuana commerce. It would also impose a 25% tax on retail sales. A September Public Policy Institute of California poll showed 60% of registered voters favoring legalization, and an October Tulchin poll found that support for legalization was at 65% among likely voters. Marijuana arrests plummet 65% after legalization, from the Coloradoan. The number of people jailed for marijuana crimes is down 65% in Larimer County 1 year after Coloradans voted to legalize it. Pot remains illegal under federal law, and the sale of non-medical marijuana continues to be a crime until the first stores begin opening in early 2014. Even so, fewer pot dealers are getting busted, said Larimer County Sheriff Justin Smith, quote, "It's more of a licensing issue than it is a criminal violation from where we're seeing it." Of people booked into Larimer County Jail by all agencies, including the Sheriff's Office, the number facing marijuana-related crimes decreased from about 268 in 2012 to 95 since Amendment 64 has passed. Offenses by people younger than 21 continue to be enforced, the sheriff said. The ages of people recently booked on marijuana crimes appear to support that. Seattle Center Pot Party draws hundreds of tokers, from the Seattle Times. The one-year anniversary celebration of legal weed in Washington drew about 400 tokers by 5 p.m., despite the frigid cold. Most of them crowded into a tent in the fenced-off party area, which quickly filled with sweet smoke, making it what's called in pot parlance a hot box. Allison Holcomb, chief author of the Legal Pot Law, said HempFest volunteer Nathan Messer asked her, "Is this the largest legal hot box in the world?" The crowd kept mostly out of sight in the tent behind a screened fence and another security fence that created a smoking moat required by the city. Visiting media included the BBC and CBC Radio Canada. Marijuana shop owners racing to bag safety, from the Denver Post. Child-resistant packaging is a pillar of Colorado's rules for recreational pot shops, approved as a requirement months ago to reduce the risk of accidental ingestion by young children. But several business owners say they are struggling to find vendors that manufacture the proper bags or can supply enough to meet demand in time for the opening of the first stores January 1st. All retail pot products leaving shops, from buds to brownies, must be placed in opaque and child-resistant packaging. Ian Sieb, co-owner of the medical marijuana dispensary Denver Relief, said he has been talking since October with a New York company that sells a product called Stink Sack. The company's owner, Ross Kirsch, landed in Denver this week and is visiting dispensaries with prototypes of his smell-proof bag with a double-locking mechanism that comes in three pot-friendly sizes. Kirsch said a half million of his opaque bags are in production and will be ready for delivery by January 1st. This has been your 420 Radio News for Monday, December 9th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines to take a look at the tripling of minors in the medical marijuana program in Colorado, thanks to Dr. Sanjay Gupta. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, The Russ Belville Show, Ganja John, and Cascadia Concentrates, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Adam's meticulous designs are individually crafted and screened in vibrant high-definition color. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org. Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs. Lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs. Home of the famous lighter leash. Herb Age Designs. Get your Herb Age t-shirts and hoodies and show your pride. Herb Age Designs. We've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter. We'll see you at this year's Hemp Fest. Crank it up!
You want to legalize it? Call your congressman today. 202-224-3121. It's free, it's easy, and you don't even have to give your name. Just your zip code, and they'll hook you up to your congressman. Call 202-224-3121 and tell Congress you support marijuana legalization. Liberate your mind.
Welcome back, everyone. 15 after the hour, and time for us to go behind the headlines to take a look at how medical marijuana miners have almost tripled in Colorado. No, I don't mean people that go into mines to get medical marijuana. I mean children, people under the age of 18. And the number of minor children registered to use medical marijuana in Colorado has almost tripled in the past 6 months, thanks to an influx of parents seeking relief for their children's incurable epileptic seizures. In April of 2013, Colorado had 35 minors, and only five under 10 years old, enrolled in their state medical marijuana program. In June of 2013, the Colorado Springs Gazette ran a story on Charlotte Feige, a six-year-old girl who suffers from Dravet syndrome, a severe form of epilepsy that racked her brain with hundreds of seizures a week. The story explained how Charlotte was given a cannabis oil extract high in CBD, and since then, her seizures have been reduced to just one or two a week. As that news spread through Colorado, by August of 2013, there were 60 minors registered. Then, on August 11th, 2013, Dr. Sanjay Gupta premiered his Weed documentary that took the story of Charlotte Feige national. 1 month later, the most recent data available is for September 2013, and it shows 90 minors registered for medical marijuana in Colorado. And as subsequent months of data are released, we are bound to see that number continue to rise. In October, the Gazette ran a story about the phenomenon of marijuana refugees, these parents of epileptic children who saw the Charlotte Feige story and dropped everything to move to Colorado for a chance at this miracle treatment. This week, the New York Times picked up on the story, dubbing Colorado the new frontier on medical marijuana. Families from Utah, Ohio, and New York, conservative Christians, liberal Democrats, moderate Muslims, they're all profiled on their emigration from their home state to Colorado. According to Paige Feige, Charlotte's mother, quote, "There are a lot more coming, a lot more," end quote, noting that over 1,000 families have contacted her since the Dr. Gupta special. And why wouldn't they? Dr. Margaret Getty, who has been one of the physicians recommending medical marijuana for these children, surveyed 11 of her marijuana refugee families and found 8 of them reporting 98% to 100% reduction in their child's seizures from various forms of epilepsy. The other 3 families reported noticeable declines in seizure activity. But nobody reported that the CBD oil doesn't work at all, and everybody reported far better results than with conventional anti-seizure pharmaceuticals. When the Stanley brothers in Colorado first bred their high CBD strain, they called it hippie's disappointment, because it didn't get anyone high. Now it is known as Charlotte's Web, for the little girl whose miraculous recovery has been a beacon for other families seeking relief for their children. We're glad that these families have the option to completely uproot their lives and move to Colorado. But considering that this medicine has less of a high than cough syrup, shouldn't every parent of an epileptic child in any state be able to have access to it? You know, not everybody has the means to be able to just tear their lives down brick by brick and rebuild them in another state across the country. And it's good that these parents were able to do so, and I feel bad for the parents who aren't able to do so, because I oftentimes read in these comment sections where people will say, well, why don't you just move? You know, when they're trying to pass medical marijuana, why don't you just move? Well, that's just not possible for some people. And a person shouldn't have to move their home state, their career, all their friends that they know, all their family, all the places they love. They shouldn't have to completely change that because someone got in their family got sick. And it's just, just disgusting in this country where we're supposed to have equal protection under the law, that in some states, little girls don't die from their epilepsy because the people there have realized that this is a safe and powerful and effective medicine for these kids. And in other states, they're so afraid of somebody getting high that they won't even let a little girl live using a medicine that can never get you high. All right, folks, you know that sound. It means it's 20 after the hour, even out here on the East Coast. Time for us to relax and enjoy ourselves a little bit. Hope you're having a good day. We'll be right back after this.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you don't just want any attorney. You want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Lauren Vasquez knows the details of California marijuana law from both a personal and professional angle. Lauren Vasquez rose from the ranks of college normal activist to become one of the Bay Area's best marijuana lawyers. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com. The number again is 855-MMJ-LAWS, 855-665-5297 for your Fired Up Lawyer, Lauren Vasquez. Lauren Vasquez is an activist attorney you can trust. Call today.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, folks, time for our Roots Monday, and we've got Bacon Dan on the line, who tells me that back in my beautiful hometown of Portland, Oregon, they actually saw snow. Is this true?
It is very true, and actually we're supposed to see more tonight. We've got a winter weather advisory for snow, freezing rain, and general crappy weather.
General crappy weather. Did you bring this with you coming in from Pittsburgh or something?
I actually did. It was a giant conspiracy theory, but I decided to bring real winter weather to Portland for my first winter here.
Now, folks that are listening to us from, you know, other cities that get actual snow would have to laugh at what little amount of snow it takes to shut the city down. Did they shut down, by the way?
They didn't shut down, but people are already starting to talk. This could be like 2007 when, you know, Portland just got inundated with tons of snow and nobody knew what to do, even though they're calling for only an inch of snow.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I was there for 2007 and, you know, coming from Idaho where I learned to drive in snow, it was funny to watch these people not have any idea how to drive in the winter weather. And of course, there's no equipment or anything to help out either. So it was a lot of fun. You may remember the famous video that went viral of the car sliding down that hill over by Portland State.
Oh, yeah, I watched it over and over. And as somebody who grew up on the shores of Lake Ontario in Rochester, New York, you know, I grew up driving in the snow as well. And I look at that going, what the hell are you doing?
Well, let's get to our daily Toker tunes. We are in the middle of December here, so you've got us into the Christmas spirit last week with some Ramones. Tell us about today's song.
All right. Well, today is the quintessential English bar tune at Christmas with Slade's Merry Christmas, Everybody. If you watched any show on the BBC around Christmas time, you've heard this song. It is played obnoxiously large amount of times every day during the holiday seasons in the UK. It's from the 70s. It's just a great song. I personally love it. My English friends all make fun of me for loving this song because it tends to be a little bit overplayed. But for me, it just gets a big smile on my face, and it's got a great history behind it. This song was actually recorded in the studio next to John Lennon during one of his solo albums. So it's really, really fun. It's just one of those songs you can sit back, toke up, and just end up singing along with. I love it.
All right, well, let's get to it. This is Slade. Thanks so much, Bacon Dan. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times Magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, folks, you know that Monday sound means it's time for our weekly dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Mitch.
Great to be back.
All right, so we always start this segment off giving Dr. Mitch the first word to let us know what is the latest in cannabis science. So, Dr. Mitch, what's new?
Two big studies out this week, both very interesting in relation to psychosis. One is a controlled family study of cannabis users with and without psychosis, coming out of Harvard Medical School, basically comparing folks who are psychotic or not and who use cannabis or not, and looking at basically how does this sort of relate to psychosis or schizophrenia formally in their family members or in the way that they've developed their disorder, and really suggesting that cannabis is not the risk factor. Other studies have suggested it is as far as psychotic disorders are concerned. It's much more all about having psychosis in the family. We've known about the heritability of schizophrenia and the psychotic disorders for decades, and this just kind of supports the idea that if there is anything going on with cannabis, it seems to be a much bigger effect with having a family history of schizophrenia or psychosis rather than necessarily anything that has to do with the plant.
Did any of that data show differences between, say, two siblings, one that goes on to develop a schizophrenic-type disorder and one who does not? Were there any other factors they found that were more relatable than cannabis, even more so than them both being siblings of a family that has a history of this?
This purposely did not pick siblings, because the big idea is to keep the participants independent of all the other participants. Sometimes if you got folks from the same family, you end up overweighting their results in the final results. But the biggest predictor was still a family history and not cannabis use itself.
Oh, okay. Well, and you'd also been telling us on a couple of shows before about some papers that you were working on, trying to get them in some peer-reviewed journals. Any progress on that front?
Sure. So the reviews I got on that PTSD paper are pretty reasonable, and I've been carving away on those and should have those sent out at the end of the month. Another paper that has come out recently is one that has to do with cannabidiol as a treatment for psychosis, which I think is particularly fun because everybody's made such a big deal about cannabis creating psychosis. And we've got a really compelling review from folks out of the Netherlands and King's College London suggesting that, in fact, cannabidiol by itself has a lot of potential as an antipsychotic treatment. And at least right now, CBD is not a controlled substance the way THC is, so folks could literally get CBD gum and chew it every day and perhaps keep psychotic features away.
Well, there's a new double bubble slogan, huh? it seems that cannabidiol or CBD is getting a lot of play lately. Of course, we've all heard the story of Charlotte Feige and the epileptic kids that are being taken care of with this high CBD oil. I've got a story in here that's talking a little bit about CBD against gliomas. Are we just going to find out that CBD is far more medical than THC than we ever imagined?
I think the clincher here is we've got a really strong antioxidant that also seems to work both peripherally in the immune system as well as in parts of the brain, and it's rare to find a substance that's got all those properties. And because it's not psychoactive the way THC is, it really has a pretty amazing safety threshold. So by all means, I think this is really going to be an amazing medication now and in the future.
You know, we're looking at a study that got brought up by a friend of mine, left-wing Larry, as a matter of fact, and he battles against rheumatoid arthritis. And a story came up through Smell the Truth. It was a study or a survey on the Canadian healthcare system. Of course, they had a medical healthcare system there. And the statistics from Health Canada say that 36% of their medical marijuana patients in Canada use cannabis to treat some form of arthritis. And new research is suggesting that this has something to do with interfering with pain at the spinal cord level. And I was wondering if you saw this research coming out of, I think it was Arthritis Research UK and the University of Nottingham. They were looking at CB2 receptors and how that might help in dealing with arthritis pain.
I didn't see that particular study, but I'm familiar with this literature. It's funny because this stuff goes back all the way to Shenang in 2737 BC. He was allegedly the first person to prescribe cannabis for rheumatism and arthritis. So, I mean, we're talking about literally millennia of cannabis use for arthritis. So I'm not surprised to see it's still working. The CB2 receptor and the mechanism for pain is certainly an intriguing one, but I also feel like the inflammation itself is affected because cannabidiol has such impressive anti-inflammatory effects that may be literally that, not that the arthritis is cured so much as the inflammation around that area tends to decrease because of prostaglandins and other things in that inflammation and swelling process, and that's decreasing the pain and giving folks better range of motion. And I'm, you know, not at all surprised that this is one of the big uses. And as the population ages, I think this is going to be particularly important.
No, yeah, and the other things we're finding out from CBD, we're finding its anti-seizure effects for, Dravet syndrome is the one that's getting a lot of play. But of course, there's other epileptic syndromes out there. How can CBD be working to help moderate these epileptic effects?
This is still kind of a mystery, and the way the brain seizes, I mean, seizure is a really complicated and in some ways frightening thing the more you know about it. If you can imagine a brain wave that sort of gets to be a tidal wave and could actually spread from one side of the brain to the other, this is how seizures end up going and keep getting bigger or keep getting longer in duration, or that start becoming more and more frequent, this kind of kindling effect where once you've had one, you're more likely to have another one and then another one more sooner, essentially. And so the mechanism with CB2 receptor may be all about interfering with that spread so that if there is a deviant wave, a wave that's similar to a seizure, it's not going to get the opportunity to go as far in the brain or to affect as much of the brain at one time, and I'm hoping that will be an effective buffer against this kind of stuff. And this is another one where at least since 1980, we've had data that are consistent with this, but ancient times also suggested that the hemp plant was going to be potentially helpful as far as seizures were concerned.
Well, you know, when you explain it that way, I've heard it in the past, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, about the endocannabinoid system kind of being a retrograde system, a system that gives feedback to the rest of our systems. Could that be something involved there, that the killing that wave of brain activity is because the endocannabinoid system gives feedback to tell the brain to stop that kind of activity?
In a sense, it's letting the brain know that this is going on in its own way. So there is a loop that says, hey, is this happening? If so, stop. And so, in fact, the communication between the amygdala and hippocampus, which is so important in PTSD, it looks like that may be part of what's going on, so that these fearful memories don't end up taking over and making people feel like they're back in the place they were where the trauma initially occurred. And it's conjecture, but it seems like something comparable may be happening as far as a seizure starting to spread from one brain structure to the next.
You know, I'm not very well versed on anatomy and physiology, but am I understanding correctly that other systems that we have, neural systems and so forth, endocrine, you know, all these different pathways that we have, operate in one direction where the cannabinoid system operates in the other direction, or is that a too simple way of putting it?
It's a little bit more simple than what's going on, but each set of neurons that functions in a specific system, say GABAergic or adrenergic or norepinephrine, you know, any of these different neurotransmitters, has something that not only communicates from one nerve to the next, but can also communicate back to the previous nerve and say, okay, the message is sent. And by making sure that part of the message is also clear, so the first neuron doesn't keep firing repeatedly and inappropriately, that's how we can avoid some of these negative consequences that CB2 seems to be in some ways related to.
I'm mapping it to my understanding of computer science, and it sounds like an ACK signal, an acknowledge signal.
So very much that kind of feedback loop, yeah.
Okay, good. All right, looking through some of the other recent studies that have come up in the news that I've been wanting wanting to ask you about here, this one kind of frightened me. It was a study about, it was a cannabis tester named Jeffrey Raber who conducted a study that found up to 70% of pesticides found in marijuana can transfer to the smoke when inhaled. And he did he's at USC, University of Southern California, and ran a laboratory in LA and found about 35% of the dispensary marijuana that he was able to acquire failed pesticides tests. So we're talking about 1 in 3 samples being laden with pesticides and 70% of the pesticides being able to transfer to the smoke. Have we heard data like this before, and what do we make of it?
It was never quite this clear just how alarming the rates on both of these could be. And I don't mean to single out cannabis on this. I'm afraid the pesticides we're using on our raspberries and blueberries are also comparably problematic.
Sure,
so
sure.
Unfortunately, it's extra big deal because of transferring this into smoke. So ideally, we need to know our growers and encourage them to keep pesticides to a minimum. The notion that there would soon be an organic cannabis stamp, the way we have organic stamps on our, you know, fruit and produce, is certainly a great idea. It's funny because, you know, if you've never grown cannabis, you don't realize how these things can be a huge help. You never know when spider mites or some crazy fungus or some crazy mold is going to take over things. And I understand the need to want to use these pesticides, but in the long run, for everybody's health, it would be much better if we could turn away from that. Of course, if everybody didn't have to hide their plants so much, if we had more protection for growers, I bet the opportunity for more organic strains would be a lot better.
Yeah, and we keep working toward that end, of course. And folks, if you want to get a question in to add to the discussion for Dr. Mitch Earlywine here on Cannabis Q&A, you can send it to 420research@gmail.com. That's Dr. Mitch's direct address. Or use our forum up at 420radio.org on our contact page, and we'll add it to the future discussion. And just to close things up, Dr. Mitch, I was reading a report on the effects of cannabis. You know, why it was entitled, Why Marijuana Can Benefit Sleep. And one point in here that I thought might be of interest to our listeners is this line that says, THC reduces the amount of REM sleep, which also leads to less dreaming. Dr. Mitch, is marijuana smoking killing our dreams?
Sad but true. if you're using cannabis every evening in order to help you sleep, you do get this crazy REM rebound when you stop. And so it's funny how this has been used in the withdrawal scales. It's like, if you quit, do you have nightmares or something like that? And a lot of folks say, you know, when they finally take a day off, they do get these pretty intense dreams. And in part, your brain really needs that time. It's really important to take those breaks. And so cannabis every night for sleep is probably not as good an idea as cannabis every once in a while for sleep.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Mitchell and Wine, for joining us here on Cannabis Q&A. We'll talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it.
It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
Hello, I'm Big Daddy, and I want you to join me at the Funky Roller Ring. We're partying hard over here, baby. So stop on by, check out the funky grooves, and shake your booty too.
Don't get in a too deep, brother. Don't get in a too heavy. Don't get so you can move about whenever you get ready.
If you're an adult who enjoys a good beer, there's a similar product you might want to know about. One without all the calories and serious health problems. Less toxic, so it doesn't cause hangovers or overdose deaths, and it's not linked to violence or reckless behavior. Marijuana, less harmful than alcohol, and time to treat it that way. For more information, visit marijuanaissafer.org.
You know, I've been playing rock and roll for a lot of years, and I've done it all. Now I do it without drugs. Hey, don't get me wrong, I still party with the best of them, but now I do it clean. You know, I'm on top of everything I do.
You want answers?
I was mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Happy anniversary, everyone. Woohoo! That's right. We've got 1 year of legalization officially under our belts here. Up in Washington State and in Colorado. December 6, 2012, that was the moment when Washington's I-502 went into effect. And in there, they, of course, legalized personal possession of an ounce of cannabis. No home grow, but you do got an ounce of cannabis. And then the following Monday, December 10th, Colorado's governor signed Amendment 64. And that, of course, established the constitutional right for adults to cultivate 6 plants and possess an ounce of cannabis. So tomorrow, 1 year anniversary in Colorado, and last Friday, the 1 year anniversary in Seattle and in Washington State, of course. And speaking of Seattle, I was there for the moment marijuana became legal in Seattle. It was just before midnight. We all went up to the Space Needle up in Seattle 1 year ago, December 6th, 2012, and it was pretty cold. And we're gathered with a few other fellow tokers, but it was just an ad hoc gathering, right? There was no plan. There was no announcements or anything like that. There was nobody really organizing the thing.
But slowly but surely, you know, a few more people show up, a few more people show up, all realizing that, you know, we're going to count down to midnight when marijuana became legal in Washington State. Turns out there was some reporters there from AP and from Canada and from a bunch of other places. I got my picture in the AP Newswire with my bullhorn counting down from 10 seconds before midnight. And then, of course, at midnight, we all took our first legal puff, although technically it wasn't a legal puff because we were being civilly disobedient. Public toking still is not legal in Washington or Colorado. So despite that, we were out there in the shadow of the Space Needle, midnight on a cold December night, smoking legal joints, at least possessing legal joints. And there were some cops there that saw us, but they decided to let it slide, figuring it was, you know, a once a year celebration. Well, this year there's been a massive change, and that is that this year on Friday, activist Ben Livingston got a permit for a pot party at the Space Needle, surrounded the whole thing with two layers of privacy fencing and a big old tent, and the whole thing is all approved by the local authorities. Reading some of the reports coming out of the Seattle Times, they say there was hundreds of people in the tent, and it turned it into the world's largest hot box. So kudos to you guys up in Seattle, Washington, for all the fun you had. Wished I could have been there. It does kind of say something, though, when the pot party has to have a moat, like a double-layer privacy fence moat, and then inside the privacy fence moat, they got to have a tent. Because God forbid anybody sees anyone smoking pot. Oh, that would be the end of the world. But when there's beer gardens, when there's blues festivals, when there's beer available, there's no privacy fencing required. It's usually just a little thin rope or something that walls off the alcohol area from the rest of the area. And people take their kids inside the beer garden area at times, and they'll be sitting with them. So we still have a long way to go as far as marijuana legalization and being treated like equals with our beer drinking friends. But I gotta say, the world of weed has sure changed in just one short year of legalization. Some of the longtime activists in this just cannot believe how fast this is beginning to take off. And I just decided to take a look at five aspects of this. These are what I consider the top five benefits of legalization in Colorado and Washington and how it's changed the world. And of course, the number one benefit, thousands of tokers did not go to jail. Thousands of them. We can't know how many didn't go to jail. Can't prove a negative, right? But we can see how many went to jail in prior years and compare them to how many are going to jail now. Because marijuana is still illegal if you're possessing more than an ounce of it. If you're growing it in Washington State, you're not medical. If you're growing too much of it in Colorado. So there are still marijuana laws to enforce. But what has the legalization, not decrim, but the legalization of 1 ounce of personal possession done? Well, even before the legalization took effect, the prosecutors in King County, Pierce County, and Clark County, Washington, dropped charges in at least 250 pending marijuana cases. That was 250 people who were guaranteed to get a criminal record for their marijuana use, did not. And that was before they had to drop the charges. It was still in November. The law didn't go into effect until December, but the prosecutors realized it really wasn't worth their effort to prosecute someone for something that wasn't going to be a crime a month from then. And since then, of course, all sorts of people who would have been busted before have not gotten busted because now the possession of marijuana is legal. We get similar numbers when we look out in Colorado. A story just came out today that out of Larimer County, Colorado, that pot arrests have dropped by almost 2/3, something like 64-65%. They dropped in there in Larimer County. Now, we're not going to know exactly how far pot arrests declined in the year following legalization until the FBI Uniform Crime Report comes out for 2013. The numbers just came out for 2012, right? The FBI collects all this police agency data from local and county and state cops all across the country. They report to them in a uniform way, you know, a very systematic way of all the crimes that were committed. Once we get that data next year, we will know exactly how the legalization of marijuana affected the overall arrest totals. The number two thing that is important goes to back to the number one about how thousands of tokers didn't go to jail. Because even though we just legalized only the possession of an ounce, this protected people who had even more than an ounce because Number two, drug dogs were detrained for finding marijuana. And a dog's nose can't tell an ounce from a pound, people. Once marijuana was no longer a contraband item, its smell is no longer probable cause for a police officer to believe there's a crime in progress. Now, other drugs are still illegal, and they're still contraband, and cops still want their canine dogs to be able to find those drugs. So the police agencies in Washington and Colorado had to detrain their drug dogs to not alert on the smell of weed. This means that the cop's dog won't be alerting to the ounce in your pocket or the alleged 12 pounds in your trunk. And I tried so hard before the election to convince some people of this, of how important it was for marijuana to not be contraband, that even though it was just an ounce we're talking about, that that ounce would be huge. Now, speaking of a huge impact in the nation, the number three best thing about this year of marijuana legalization, national polls shot up 10 percentage points. 10 points. Prior to legalization passing, Gallup, you know, the Gallup polls, they're probably the best known national polling organization. They asked the country what they thought of legalizing marijuana. And back then, only 48% of the public thought it was a good idea. After legalization has passed, Gallup's latest poll shows 58% of the country agrees with legalization. It seems once legalization became a reality, it became easier for some people to envision and accept it. And even for the people who still don't accept it, polls show they are supportive of the states that do, with large majorities saying the federal government should not interfere with Washington and Colorado and any other state that decides to legalize marijuana. The number four effect from 1 year of marijuana legalization, more older folks and fewer teenagers are using pot regularly. You know, the prohibitionists, they always claim that legalization will hurt the children, but it seems to be having the opposite effect. In the beginning of the 2000s, if we compared teenagers, and for the sake of argument, that teenagers are aged 12 to 17, versus older adults, and those folks were going to be age 50 and older, when you compare teens versus older adults who smoke pot nearly daily, and for that we're going to consider 21 or more days a month, the statistics showed that there were 3 toking teens for every 1 older toking adult. That's back in the early 2000s. 3 teenagers to every older person smoking pot on a near daily basis. Now, after the expansion of medical marijuana to 20 states and legalization in 2 states, the ratio has just about flipped. There are now 2.5 older toking adults for every toking teen. And it's not just that more older folks are toking. In 2001, there was an estimated 376,000 near daily teen tokers. In 2012, the figure is 328,000, gone down by almost 50,000. And finally, number five, international support for marijuana prohibition is crumbling. This week, Uruguay's upper house is expected to pass marijuana legalization that the lower house passed earlier this year. President Mujica has championed this bill and will sign it into law, making Uruguay the first country with a legalized marijuana market. Other Latin American countries are voicing their dissent to U.S.-led prohibition policies at the United Nations, wondering why their countries should suffer the devastation of marijuana cartel violence when the U.S. has 2 states that have legalized marijuana. You know, it makes a lot of sense to me. I agree with the Latin American countries. The hypocrisy has to end. It's time for all of the United States and all of the countries around the world to recognize the marijuana market's not going anywhere, and we want safe access to the flower we love. We deserve the same equal rights as beer drinkers and cigarette smokers, and we won't stop until we get it. Hey, folks, that's all the time we got for tonight. Thanks for joining us. No Toker Talk Radio while I'm out on the road, so we'll see you tomorrow. And until next time, from Miami, Florida, take care of each other, tokers. Yeah.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you giant, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you